Welcome back, everybody. This is Sharon Sarles, Overcoming Learning Problems, and we equip parents and educators first with hope and then with good ideas, but most of all, with the basic biblical faith-filled understanding that God wants total well-being for all children, and therefore it is attainable. Have faith, have hope, and grab it for yourself. Today I'm going to have an episode that's going to be really helpful for educators. Among other things, I am certainly a teacher. I have even served for a few days in public school. I don't know why. I guess I look like a teacher. People do think that I am a public school teacher. Not exactly, but I have served there with such distinction that it kind of ruffled feathers. Mostly I've taught in the college level or been a leader in the church. Today I'm going to read to you a testimony of someone who taught in public, that is to say, government schools in the United States. This is a chapter entitled A Teacher's Testimonial on the Teaching of Reading by Paul Lukowski, out of the book written by Samuel Blumenfeld and Alex Newman entitled Crimes of the Educators: How Utopians Are Using Government Schools to Destroy America's Children. In another episode, I want to review this book in its entirety, but one of the first points that grabbed my attention was that Blumenfeld and Newman claimed that schools induce dyslexia. Well, you'll hear that I don't fully buy that, but that schools are failing to teach reading, for certain. But I have said many times that I think schools teach math about as badly as it can possibly be taught. And now I understand from what they're saying that schools have also taught reading, which is also to say writing and composition and English language arts skills in general, about as badly as they can possibly be taught. And now I think purposively so. Anyway, but that's a topic for another episode, but that helps you as a backstory that they are claiming that schools induce dyslexia. Okay, now I'm just going to read to you this chapter written by Paul Lukowski. So I'm going to read to you, and it's going to say I, but the I there is not Sharon Sarles. The I here is Paul Lukowski. So reading, A Teacher's Testimonial on the Teaching of Reading. And this is Appendix A. So you'll see that Newman and Blumenfeld are pro-phonics and against the whole language method of education, which was promoted by Dewey and some far leftists. Okay, reading Lukowski. I have been a high school English teacher. For years, I remember in college wanting to know how to teach children to read. I went to a teacher college established in 1910, and the school had one of the oldest teacher colleges in the country. Its college of education enjoyed an excellent reputation. I asked three different professors, "How do you teach reading?" I received three different vague responses. After I completed my second year of teaching, I realized that my students could not read. I taught grades 9 through 12. The second year, I had three classes of ninth graders. I assigned the novel To Kill a Mockingbird for them to read. I realized that most of my students could not read the novel's literate narrative. It was during this time that I heard Samuel Blumenfeld interviewed on shortwave radio. At this time, the Rodney King verdict had come in and there was rioting in the streets of LA. He said that the reason the people were rioting was that they did not have jobs. They did not have jobs because they were illiterate. He said you could tell they were illiterate by listening to the lyrics of the songs they listened to and by the way they talked. I was intrigued by what he said because it verified my experience as a high school teacher. He then said schools were at fault because of the way they taught reading. I was again intrigued because of my experience in college trying to determine how to teach children to read. I was never taught it in college. Mr. Blumenfeld had made two provocative statements on the radio, but I knew them to be true because of my personal experience. I then decided to buy a couple of his books, including Alpha Phonics. My third year of teaching, I had a class of ninth graders that consisted of the worst performing students in the school. These students were in the dropout prevention program. They were waiting until they turned 16 to drop out of school. I teach in our state's poorest county, and our district at that time had a high dropout rate. Also in the class were several students from Mexico and one from Haiti. These students were speakers of other languages, ESOL. Their only problem was that they had a limited understanding of English. Every day in the class was a struggle with disruptive behavior. And if I could finish class without a student being sent to the office for discipline problems, I considered it a success. The students had chronic discipline problems. They had trouble with the law, every problem you could imagine. After 2 months of getting absolutely nowhere with my students, I decided I would try an experiment. I was going to use Alpha Phonics beginning with lesson one to teach those that wanted to learn to read. I told the class that those that wanted to learn would sit on this side of the room and those that did not were to sit on the opposite side of the room, and the only rule was a student could not interfere with the Alpha Phonics lesson. Okay, now I'm going to break from reading. I'm going to discuss this. So notice that he, in college, asked very basic and pertinent questions and got no answers. This is certainly my experience with the education faculty at least one well-known senior university. What was taught or not taught in the education department was appalling. Actually, now I'm going to call the name of two senior universities that I attended, but I did not attend in the education department because of this fact. I checked out their doctorates and decided to pass. Okay, and then he talks about his experience as a new teacher. Notice, it doesn't look to me like he was fully employed if he just had three classes. I don't understand that. But I noticed that he was an English teacher in high school, and he was given students who were not literate. This does not surprise me because this matches the experience that I know about. And then the third year, he was given the lowest, the poorest of those students. That's a good way to run teachers off. But it's a very poor way to teach children. Don't you think that the worst students should get the best teachers? But does that ever happen? And if you're not a teacher, the answer is no, because the best teachers vie for the best assignments, which are in the best schools, which are in the parts of town where the highest money is. And so you have remedial math taught by coaches, not somebody who even studied pedagogy. Why are you not putting your best teachers with the students who need teaching, better teaching? But no. That's the opposite of what really happens, which is illustrated here. Notice that they had ESOL students put in with illiterate students, which is wrong. There's mandatory education in Mexico. So that if the child came from Mexico, he probably is literate. Haiti, all bets are off. But why aren't they in an ESL class, English as a second language? I don't know. I would suggest that there are plenty, and 20 years ago, there were plenty of ESL students everywhere in the nation, but certainly in the border states, there certainly were. They could probably easily make full classes. And notice his discipline rule. It said, the rule was that you cannot interfere with the lesson. Oh, yes, I ended up trading down to this basic level. When I was having discipline problems in my college class, and I specifically chose to teach in college and not in K through 12 because I didn't want to be a traffic cop. I wanted to be an educator. But nevertheless, as time wore on, and society degraded, and the educational system degraded. Over time, eventually I started getting problems in my class. And I'm thinking, were they the high school students sometimes? Usually they were the graduates. Okay, you know, recently graduated out of high school where the people are most likely to give me problems. Anyway, so I discussed this with my daughter, who was fully mature adult and taking college classes. And she opined, and I agreed, that the point here is to not violate the learning of those students who want to learn. I always complained when I was a high school student, if the teacher spent so much time chastising the bad kids, the kids who were violating the rules, she was taking time away from us who were there. Particularly, I remember she was a Spanish teacher, and we had one student who was chronically 5 minutes late, and so she would take 10 minutes to chastise him, and I'm thinking, you're wasting our time, lady. So I didn't want to be that teacher, and also I had been told at one college where I taught that I was not permitted to call a student down, but anyway, which of course is crazy. Oh, by the way, I'm told that here in Texas, in some small, the specific story comes from a small school system, but I doubt that it's different in the large ones, that increasingly that you may not send a student to the office. So that's just public school teachers will say they want a principal who backs them up with discipline. But if you have a principal who says you can't send a student to the office, well, if they're disrupting class and you can't send them to the office, what do you do? Well, this particular family of educators, they send them to the hall and then talk with them in the hall because they think that if you call them down in class, then it becomes a feud. Well, and that may be a good management technique, but why is it that you can't send a child to the office? I don't understand, but I'm not a public school educator nor woke, so I don't know that I should understand. But my rule was, I don't want students violating the right, and it's not a human right, but a contractual right, for the students who want to learn, to learn. So if you've paid your tuition, then you are due, you are entitled to an opportunity to learn. And if you come to class and are ready to learn, you should be afforded the opportunity. And if somebody else is taking the airtime or inducing the teacher to take the airtime to do something else, then that's not okay. So anyway, Lukowski made the rule that a student cannot interfere with the alphaphonics lesson. So back to him. Until this time, everyone sat scattered around the back of the room, as they did not have a seating chart. Any student, when given the option, will not sit in the front of the room with the teacher. Okay, breaking now from Lukowski. By the way, if you are in a class and you want to make a good grade, sit at the front of the room, because you are less distracted and more focused on the teacher. And also, you're sitting beside other good students. But in a class of low-performing students, I'm not surprised that they all want to sit in the back, right? Why? Because they learn from the beginning that they can get away with more in the back of the class, and they're less under the scrutiny of the teacher. And maybe that's functional for everybody. But if I'm standing in the front of the class and I'm talking to the people, and the people in the back of the class are making so much disturbance that we cannot continue to have our conversation, in my class you get exeunted. Anyway, so this has the ring of truth to me. Okay. The stage being set, I began the first day by reading the directions from the teacher's manual to Alpha Phonics and beginning with lesson one. I wondered what response I would get. I was shocked by the response of the students. Nothing could have prepared me for what happened. If someone had told me what would happen, I would not have believed them, with the exception of a few students who sat on the other side of the room because they did not want to participate. All of the students followed along as I wrote the lessons on the board. I would write the lesson on the board, read it aloud, and then have them read. The students leaned forward in their desks and followed along. The next day, the students all sat in the front of the room. Let me read that sentence again. The next day, the students all sat in the front of the room. Let me read that again. The next day, the students all sat in the front of the room. Everyone would raise their hands and want to read. Indeed, after the first few days, the students would fuss among themselves to read aloud. They fought over who could write the lessons on the board. Everyone wanted to read aloud. Everyone sat in the front of the room. There were no discipline problems. The entire class had been transformed. I had discovered a disturbing truth. We worked through the book, and about halfway through the book, we began reading Sounder and The Old Man in the Sea. One youth in the class who could not read and who had been a behavior problem told me that every night he would sit with his dad as his dad read the sports section of the paper. He said he always wanted to read the paper with his dad, but he could not because he did not know how to read. A few weeks after starting Alpha Phonics, he entered the class one day and told me that he was driving down the road. He began to sound out the words on the signs. He was excited because he never had been able to do that before. Okay, I should have stopped at the paragraph before that. I had discovered a disturbing truth. What was that disturbing truth? Yes, I'm going to push you to articulate it for yourself, because if you were educated in the American government school system, you're used to just letting things pass you by and not fully engaging. You're not used to active learning. Active learning doesn't mean gamification. It means actually engaging your brain. What was that disturbing truth that Lukowski discovered? That the children wanted to learn. But you know very well, you educator, you parent, you student, if you reflect upon it, that anyone who has a problem, given a completely incompetent system, and purposefully so, is blamed. And then, as you see, the second paragraph just brings me to tears. Students who desperately want to learn. And more than having been prevented from. Tortured by Tantalus. And even more than that. Blamed. Blamed. As if they did not want to learn. And the only terminology that I know for that is mind fucking. Now, if you know me, you know that I am a lady and I don't use vulgar terms. But that sounds appropriate. This student wanted to learn desperately, and not only was he prevented by policy from having a decent phonics program, he was further prevented by the special ed system. He was prevented by the remedial classes that he was in. He was prevented by the behavior policies in his school. And here is a teacher who was nearly run off, who did something probably not permissible today. Because he chose his own method and his own curriculum, and probably today couldn't get away with that. Back to Lukowski. We had started Alpha Phonics in October, and the semester ended in December. I would not be seeing the students anymore. We had completed about 3/4 of the book and read the 2 novels. I would begin each class by doing about 15 minutes of Alpha Phonics and then read from the novels. The students were eager and well-behaved. The youth who began reading the signs told me that in the evening he could now sit with his dad and read the sports sections along with him. They would talk about what they had read. 3 Spanish-speaking students learned English this way. Look, folks, I know you care about your students, or at least you did when you were young. At least most of you. When you went into teaching, you really wanted to teach and you cared about children. But I know from my study of sociology that when an individual gets into a system, a social system, the system is almost always stronger than the individual. I know. But repentance is a good thing. And God will help you. God will help you. The following year, I tried another experiment. I had one student who was identified as having ADD, ADHD. He was notorious. He was a 9th grader. This was his first year at our school. Just one cotton-picking moment. Was FERPA not in existence? Of course it was. Are you, what is it, whatever color pill yet? I had another, you do get this, okay? The student wasn't even in the school, and he was notorious in the school. How did that happen if FERPA law was followed? No, FERPA, like HIPAA, was exactly the opposite to what it was sold to us. Okay. I had another student who was in trouble with the dean's office constantly. I gave both of them Sam Blumenfeld's oral reading test, the BORAT. Blumenfeld oral reading test, the BORAT. And they scored between the first and second grade levels. 9th graders scoring it between first and second grade levels. I made an arrangement with other teachers to have both students come to my class for 15 minutes while I did an alpha phonics lesson with them. Because I began in August, I was able to finish the whole book with them by Christmas. I gave both students the Borat post test. One boy had doubled his reading score and the other was close behind him. The boy with ADD/ADHD was never antsy or hyperactive when he was working on the lesson. He was a completely different child when he was with me. Indeed, his teacher would often allow him to stay the whole hour with me because he had many behavior problems in her class. He never had a behavior problem when working on alpha phonics, and neither was the other child who was constantly getting into fights and being suspended. When these two youngsters worked on alpha phonics with me, they were totally different children. Very interesting that he calls them children, and they were in the ninth grade. I don't guess you could get away with doing that today. This is not so long ago. When was the Rodney King verdict? Just a minute. Okay, it looks like the Rodney King riots were in 1992, and the verdict was handed down in 1995, maybe. So, yeah, we are more than 30 years. We're more like, yeah, more like 30 years. Okay. The following year, I worked with some other children. I had developed a system where I would set aside 10 minutes each class period and do a few lessons while the rest of the class would work quietly on their own at their desks. I would use the Borat to identify the illiterates in my class. I would ask them if they ever had had an A in English, and invariably they would say no, and I would ask them if they wanted one, and they would say yes. Right there, notice that. As we assume that children don't care about school. Yes. Well, I wonder if anybody in the school, anybody of the officials in the school care about education. I truly have wondered that over the years. And in fact, the answer is that most teachers who are employed as public school, i.e. government school teachers, most of them do not read for leisure. No, I really think they don't highly value education. And for that reason, it just galled me as somebody who either was in graduate school. I was in graduate school when I was dealing with these special educators when my daughter was in school. And then I taught in college when I was dealing with government educators with the first crop of grandchildren. And it was abundantly obvious. Not only was there a fortress mentality, there was no even consideration that much of the population was considerably more educated than these so-called educated, anyway. Okay. And invariably, they would say they had never made an A in English, but they wanted one. I would then say, I, Lukowski, that all they had to do was work with me for 10 minutes a day on alpha phonics until we were done with the book. I'm going to have to read that again. I would then say that all they had to do was work with me for 10 minutes a day on the alpha phonics until we were done with the book. 10 minutes a day, folks. And you educators have not only thought, but communicated to the students that their situation was hopeless 10 minutes a day. When we were done with the book, I would choose several pages at random for them to read from. If they could read the pages to me, they would receive an A. I told them that that was all they had to worry about in class. I was not interested in what they did regarding the usual coursework. That was the incentive I offered them. It was up to them. It was up to them. They had a choice, but it was a real choice because the educator was actually doing some educating. One youth had failed the ninth grade. Yeah, I can hear people saying, well, I don't have a choice. Well, you make a choice. You make a choice. Make it for yourself. Otherwise, you're not a teacher. You're a pawn in the hand of the Antichrist beast system. Is that what you want to do with your life? Yeah, don't tell me you don't have a choice. You find the choice and you take it. Paragraph, Lukowski. When youth had failed... I faced the same choices that you have. And worse, because I didn't have somebody else supporting me. So don't tell me you can't. Will not. Not acceptable. You have a choice. You find the choice. You make choices. All right. One youth had failed the ninth grade and was taking his ninth grade English class over again with me. He was also taking his 10th grade class. Notice this placement situation. He failed ninth grade, and so he's been given ninth grade and 10th grade class at the same time. Sounds to me like somebody had set him up for failure. His 10th grade class met next door to mine, first period. He would then come to my class, second period. And his 10th grade teacher was the same one he took the year before the class which he had failed. His 10th grade teacher or book, I don't know. He was working 10 minutes a day on Alpha Phonics for several weeks. When one day the door that communicated between my room and the neighboring room opened, it was his 10th grade teacher. She called me over to her and asked what I was doing with him. I told her Alpha Phonics. She said, look, the whole class was watching Channel 1 and chatting. So if you don't know, Channel 1 is the school system TV network. It was during homeroom. The whole class, except this youth, who was reading a book I had given him. The teacher was flabbergasted. She knew he was illiterate and could not believe he was able to read. The silence here is for butt-kicking and or repentance. She knew he was illiterate and could not believe that he was able to read. And if she knew he was illiterate, why did he go through her class, fail, and then go through a class again? And what was the office doing, putting him in ninth grade and 10th grade when they knew he was illiterate? Did I say butt kicking and repentance? One day I was working with this boy at his desk. Okay, excuse me. This is Lukowski. I know saying boy for a ninth grader is inappropriate. Okay. When we had a new student enter the class, he had just been released from juvenile detention. He knew the youth I was working with and sat by him as we worked together. He was curious about what we were doing, and I explained it to him. He said he could not read either. He explained that he started having trouble reading in the third grade. He said that when the time came to read aloud, he would intentionally get into trouble so he would be sent to the office so he would not have to read. He could not take the embarrassment. He did not want anyone to know he could not read. The boy I was working with chimed in and said that he was the same way. They both recounted events when they would get into trouble on purpose so they could avoid reading. They would even start fistfights. The boy who had been in juvenile detention was sent there because he had set fire to the junior high school. Folks, when I was in graduate school in sociology, I proposed a master's thesis on the connection between juvenile delinquency and learning disabilities. Well, I couldn't do a thesis because there wasn't enough written about it in sociology or published about it. But it did offer a paper, a professional paper at a professional sociology conference. And my nascent theory was that males, if they were not able to compete and win either in academics or in sports, would therefore attempt to achieve in status offenses. And that this explained the high correlation between learning disabilities and adjudicated juvenile delinquency. And that might be true, but this is a little more direct causation. By the way, there is a high correlation. And that's true not just in juvie, but also in prison. I know some folks in my metro area who were doing a Toastmaster group in the federal prison here with such wonderful results. There were other educators and there were other religious groups, but the Toastmasters in particular had a very low recidivism rate. People need other options. And if there's no educational option, if there's no way toward achievement, then there will be achievement in crime. Again, there is a lot of blame to be placed at the feet of the system itself. And by the way, most of those religious programs, educational programs, and specifically the Toastmaster program that was done for free in the federal prison was axed by the new warden. A great deal of the recidivism, that means repeated crime, is laid at the feet of the system, because we do know what to do. We just choose not to. Back to Lukowski. The following year, I had firmly established my regular 10-minute routine in my class, and every year after that, I would have students who would participate. One year, I was in a staffing meeting for a boy who was labeled as a special education student with learning disabilities. Okay, ears up. Here's your ARD meeting. That's what we call them in Texas. The special education staffer, whom I had never met before, asked me what I was doing with the boy. The reason she asked is that she was with the boy's science teacher when the science teacher had reported that the boy began volunteering to read aloud. The science teacher was astonished. We live in a small community, and the teacher had known the boy ever since kindergarten and had known that he could not read. That's the placement in special education program. And here he was, volunteering to read aloud in her class. I told them what it was I was doing. Folks, 10 minutes a day of phonics. But the system has, since Dewey and the communists, they have pushed phonics out. And it was known back, there was a study back in 1844 that the whole sight method doesn't work. It was the Lanarkians who tried it at that time. But Dewey and the Soviets, they got it in. And repressive toleration. Okay. Back to Lukowski. There is one case that haunts me. Had a big, strapping youth who was 17 years old. He had failed 9th and 10th grade English because he could not read. He was in my 9th grade English class. I had given him the Borat test, and he was at the 1st or 2nd grade level, a typical case. We began working 10 minutes a day. After a month, I gave him the book Sounder, and he told me he was reading it at home. We were about halfway through the book when he no longer showed up in my class. I learned that he had moved away. I do not know if he ever completely learned how to read. He was a decent, well-mannered youth who would show up every day, was polite, and carried a big stack of books with him. He was waiting for someone to teach him to read. If your mother and you have become a dragon lady to get something for your child in public school, good on you. That might not be the most efficient way to get a good education for your child, but at least you tried. This young man had somebody to teach him to be well-mannered. And he carried a stack of books to school because he wanted somebody to teach him to read. And I'm not apologizing for my tears. I hope some educators hear this. That's my comment. Back to Lukowski. My daughter was born in 1996. I remember seeing the little girl read in the Hooked on Phonics commercial, and I wished my daughter could read like her. When she was two, I began to teach her how to read during summer vacation, and she would take naps then, and I followed the advice in the teacher's manual. I set up a routine. Every day before she took up her nap, we would sit together, following Sam's advice. Blumenfeld. I appealed to her intellect. I said, it's time for our lessons. I began by following the alphabet pre-reading exercises in the back of the book. Again, following Mr. Blumenfeld's advice, I did not pressure her or scold her, regardless of her behavior. Sometimes she would kick at the book and giggle, and I would say, you did a good job today. I would put the book away, and we would continue tomorrow. It went on like this for several months. I agree that if you're trying to teach a 2 or 3 year old to read, you should very much not scold them. But I wouldn't say you did a good job if they kicked a book. I believe in truth telling. Okay, back to Lukowski. When school started again, she would do the lessons with me before we went to bed. She enjoyed the routine and the lessons. One evening, while my wife was in the room, she took out the book on her own and began reading from lesson two. Am, Sam, hear the S sound, she said. Then, Sam sat, etc. My wife could not believe it. Did she memorize those words? She asked. No, I replied, and then explained the method. Notice that the child was going to school, but she was learning from her father. I don't know any other way that it has ever worked. Not in my actual observation. When our daughter was three, we were driving down the road when she said, look, Mama, pointing to a sign, Marshall's, there's your store. My wife could not believe it. When she was three, there was one occasion when our daughter was at Sunday school and her teachers were arguing whether or not she was reading the colors on the crayons. She's memorized them, said one. No, she's reading them, said the other. The color she was reading were purple, fuchsia, and magenta. Magenta was her favorite. This is not necessarily a genius. This is someone who had a teacher for a parent. Okay, I'm going to skip a little bit. Okay, so not surprisingly, the child was put in the gifted and talented track. Anyway, and the author mentions Samuel Blumenfeld's had a tutor, and he used that to instruct his child in math. Yes, and if your child is going to learn math, you're going to have to teach them, because you're not going to learn it in government schools. Okay, back to the author. While my daughter was in first grade, I was asked to sit on a parent-teacher committee. While on the committee, the mayor of our town complained to the principal that he had been on the committee for 3 years and the committee was always talking about doing something outside the box when it came to improving the school's reading scores. Regardless of what the committee did to improve reading scores, they were always the same. The principal said he was open for suggestions outside the box. Well, today, if they said that, it would be complete smoke and mirrors, because they're not permitted to do anything. And there have been many programs of school improvement, and those that work and those that don't are all X'd out. I mean, I know some outstanding programs that were proven to work and for that reason shut down. I'm sorry, that's true. Okay, but this is back in the 90s, so maybe it was truthful that the principal was actually open to suggestions. No one had any suggestions, so I said I was familiar with the method of reading instruction in the public schools, and that was what was at fault. I said I was familiar with the method of reading instructions in the public schools, and that was what was at fault. I said I had a method that worked better. Indeed, I said that if I dropped my daughter off at school at 7:30, I could walk into any class, give a 10-minute lesson, and still arrive at high school where I would teach in time to sign in at 8 a.m. I said that if anyone doubted me, I'd get a paycheck every 2 weeks with a comma in it. What? I don't even understand that. Let's put it on the table and keep the tourists out. I wanted to let them know my intentions were serious. They took me up on the offer, and my first-year teacher volunteered her class. A first-year teacher. I began the first Monday after spring break. I had only 6 weeks to work with the children. I made transparencies of the Alpha Phonics lesson and followed the teacher's manual. I did only a 10-minute lesson. The first-year teacher combined her bottom-half students with the reading teacher's bottom-half students. And after 2 weeks, the mother of one of the children approached me. She said, "I'm glad you're working with my daughter. A while back, the school called me up to their office and told me there was something wrong with my daughter. She had a learning disability. I cried for 2 days. I told her not to listen to anything the schools told her, to be patient and to watch what happens. A week after school was over, I saw the mother again, and I asked her how her daughter was doing. She said that the school had called her up again and told her that they had given her daughter the end-of-the-year reading test showing that she had a 40% improvement in her reading, and they were going to put her into an advanced class. Now, folks, if you know anything about how proper this is supposed to be done, even in the 90s, you don't call a mother up and say the child has a learning disability without some battery of standardized tests. But a 40% improvement in reading in 6 weeks is outstanding. And so she went from having a learning problem to going into an advanced class. Okay, and what do you think the reason for that was? A change in instruction. Repentance time, folks. Okay, and he gives another example. I was once explained to a student why children have reading problems. When I finished, a girl from the other side of the class who thought I was not listening said, "This is what happened to my brother. He's in the fourth grade, hates to read, and gets stomach aches and headaches." I told her that his troubles were over and gave her a copy of Alpha Phonics. 4 months later, I asked her how her brother was doing. She said he completed the book and reads just fine. I had the same success with students in special education who were labeled as learning disabled or educatably mentally retarded. I have 100% success with every student. The only variable is the speed at which students progress. You must follow Dr. Blumenfeld's advice and be patient. Do not pressure the child. I've had many other heartbreaking stories about children who have quit school because they did not know how to read and no one will teach them. I've had children take up a copy of Alpha Phonics and keep it to teach their friends how to read. I encouraged everyone to try Alpha Phonics. The results you see in the child are truly miraculous. It must be seen to be believed. Amen. And Lord, help us.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.